been in my office. He said, right here.
Rabbi Poser.
Rabbi Poser. We're not here to ask you for money there. Just like it was before one of the holidays, it could have been Passover or whatever. I don't recall the holiday. But he said, I want to put the floor on you. I said, Rabbi, I said, I am such a terrible Jew. I struggle to read Hebrew. It's a struggle for me, and I should have taken it up and done it in my later life, but I didn't. And he said to me, and I'll never forget this, he said, there is no such thing as a bad Jew. All Jews are wonderful. I don't know, Carol, if you can't read Hebrew or do read Hebrew, but all Jews are wonderful. And that was his philosophy. And he had been a wonderful man. So, but I do often in my adult life been upset with myself that I didn't go back and learn more about the Torah.
There's a lot that's easily learnable. Talk about that very shortly, but I'm going to poke you for the last time about reform. You keep coming back to various positive encounters you've had with Rabbi Posner, with Lubavitch, with this or that, and the only comment you've been able to make about Rabbi Friedhoff is that he was not a good pastor and essentially Jewish teacher. Was your contact with Reform Judaism deep enough, or certainly long enough, so you could say anything more about that? Where is it going?
Well, I don't think I'm the right guy to tell you where it's going, because I've become very uninvolved with Reform Judaism in Pittsburgh at our temple. Let me just correct you. I didn't say Rabbi Friedhoff was a bad pastor.
I did.
You did. There were two events that happened with Rabbi Friedhoff that turned me off. The first event was way back when I was just a kid. The War of Independence, 1948, Israel's struggle for independence. He was asked by a leading light in this community, I believe it was Herman Feinberg, to speak from him. Herman was not a member of his congregation, because Herman's a traditional Jew, to speak to the issue of raising money for Israel during this war of independence. And he told Herman that he couldn't do it because his congregation, which in those days was, I guess, still predominantly German Jewish, because his congregation wouldn't permit him to do it. Well, I was just a kid, and that's 50 years ago, and I was turned off when I heard that comment. And even though I was a member of the congregation, I sort of lost a certain respect that I had, not for his intelligence, not for his brilliance, not for his scholarship, but that's when I was turned off. So I'm not very much involved in the Reform movement, so I don't think I'm qualified to discuss it.
Do you have other encounters with any other rabbis in Pittsburgh that you can recall?
Not really.
About that Margarita Shul?
Rabbi Landis.
Do you know him?
Oh, sure. Morris Landis was always an activist when it came to the community. He was always involved with the community. We had a Rabbi Cohen that was here one time. I forget what shul. He was an Orthodox rabbi also, who was active in the campaign, the Federation campaign, the UJA campaign. Mm-hmm. So I've had other rabbis I've been involved with and had a great deal of admiration and respect for them. But not an intimate involvement.
Yeah.
Not sort of an involvement on a community level. You know, it's interesting. I have one other thing that turned me off on the Reform and Rabbi Shaw. We have a young rabbi of Reform who's bright as can be, Mark Statham. I respect him now. He's the head of the Russian Jewish immigration program. We're still bringing a lot of Jews to Israel, as you know. way back when I was president of the Federation, early 70s, he was very perturbed that in Israel, the reform movement was not getting equal time, equal share, equal anything. And he spoke to one of his senior citizen groups that he lectured to during the week at one of the temple programs, and told them that he didn't think they should support the Federation because the Federation was sending most of its money to Israel. Israel was not supporting Reform Judaism, which I thought, for a really bright guy, it was terrible.
Who was the group he spoke to?
Senior citizen ladies. I got this from Harriet Levinson's mother told me about it.
Oh, this is a common
problem. Huh?
It's a common problem.
Right. And
common issue.
Like, and it happened. I called the president of the congregation on the phone, Happy Alan Berkman, at that time, and I said, I would like to... I think what Dr. Rabbi Statement has done is just a terrible thing for the community. And I want to speak with him and your board about this, and I want to get from him an apology. Because I think it's a terrible thing, and he's got to go back to these women and say that that isn't really what he meant. So that meeting came to fruition. I went to the meeting. It was sort of I didn't want to make it a tribunal, but it turned out to be like a court case. And he refused to back down from his position. I said to him, in front of that whole board, I said, if I was the president of this congregation, Rabbi, you wouldn't be here any longer. Because when you're going to be divisive in the community, I don't think that's the position that any rabbi should take, whether he's Orthodox, Reformed, or Conservative. But to tell these seniors, and they respect you as a rabbi because the rabbi has respect, you're a teacher, and to teach them to do something that's so divisive, I think is terrible. Since then, I'm a very good close friend of Mark Statement. I respect what he's doing today, but that was another turnoff. You were asking for turnoffs I had vis-a-vis reform. Well, that was another one.
That's another jump question again. The University of Pittsburgh and some of the institutions in Oakland, like some of the clubs, had some limitations on Jewish membership or actual exclusionary provisions. Were you ever involved in
that? Yes.
Please talk about that.
Well, you know, the Duquesne Club was
the big one, but
the
ones in Oakland, too.
Well, the Duquesne Club, I was involved with what we called the executive suite in those days, to try to get the Duquesne Club to change its position vis-a-vis Jews. We had a rationale for it. In those days, we had a guy named Bob Hainsfelder, who was vice president, Jewish vice president of PPG. We had a guy named Cy Herwald, who was the vice president of Westinghouse. And here these men would have to go to the Duquesne Club for their business meetings, have to take customers, and then they couldn't be members. They couldn't sign the check. They had to get somebody else to sign the check for them, which I thought was absolutely preposterous. I believe I was still president of the Federation. We appointed what we called an executive suite. I was a committee. I don't recall who I had chair that. I think it was Leon Netzer. And they went to the Duquesne Club, and we turned that thing around. We got Jews in.
What year?
That had to be in the era. That was in the mid-70s. I don't know the exact date, maybe late 70s, but it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And thank goodness, it happened, and Duquesne Club has a lot of Jews today. And
they need them.
Yeah. The Jews are important wherever they are. They're businessmen and so on.
They didn't need them so badly.
I'll tell you one experience that I put together that I thought was maybe the best thing I did as president of the Federation, talking about non-Jews. The Arab boycott came into play. And there were a bunch of major corporations in this town that were adhering to the Arab boycott. Gravel, U.S. Steel, I think PPG, Alcoa. So I'm president of the Federation, and this thing was just bothering me terribly. So I sat down as a president of the Federation and wrote to every chairman of every major corporation in the city. And in those days, we were the third largest corporate headquarters in the country. And I invited them to come to a meeting to discuss the Arab boycott, which I would preside over. Lester Hamburg was very active in the non-Jewish community at that time. He always was, and he was on the board of PNV, it was at that time. And I asked Lester if he would host that in his home rather than do it at the Federation. And he said he'd be glad to. We brought that meeting together, and I just...
Who showed up? Which companies?
Let me tell you something. They virtually all showed up. There were a couple of guys who were out of town. It was the only reason they didn't show up. And it was interesting that they all came. And I knew the subject. The subject was the boycott. So we were discussing the boycott and why it was important for them to do business in Israel. I remember I said to one of them, I don't know which one, I said, look, I said, they need you a lot more than you need them. I mean, you're doing business with Saudi Arabia, you're doing business with Kuwait, you're doing business with these countries with a lot of money and a lot of oil, but they need your expertise. They need your product a lot more than you need them. I know that you need them, it's important. But they're never, I don't care. If you said you would not sign the Arab boycott papers, they're still going to buy from me, in my opinion. So one of the guys there, I forget his name, Bob Lauterbach, I guess he was with Pittsburgh Rolling Steel. And he had been to Israel. He was the only one in the whole group that had ever been to Israel. So I said to him, how many of you have ever been to Israel? And he was the only one that said yes. And that was because I think he had a son who was a minister, and he'd go to Jerusalem. So I said, right there on the spot, I said, I'd like to invite all of you to come as the guest of the Federation to Israel. We'll plan a trip. We'll try to plan it around when you can all go. And you know, to a man, they said, we'd love to go if we can fit it into our schedule. Because I want you to see Israel firsthand and see what I'm talking about, why it's important for American corporations to do business with Israel. Because Israel's the only friend we have in that part of the world, and you guys know it. To make a long story short, I arranged that trip. We went twice. We took... And every corporate head in the city said he would go if he could. And I took about 20 of them to Israel on two trips, one year and one the next. And when we were leaving, we had each year, we'd critique every day. I took them to see the prime minister. Begin was the prime minister at that time. We went to his home. He treated us royally. They were... When they said to him, I'll never forget that Roger Albrand was the chairman of Allegheny Lebanon. And Roger said to him, to Begin, he said, well, why aren't the Palestinians entitled to a state just like you? They've been wandering and they've been thrown out and so on. And Begin said to him, I'm not saying they're not entitled to a state. But this is our land. This is our land. And Israel came about because of the Holocaust, where we lost 6 million of our people. And he says, they really do have a state. Jordan is their state. Jordan is 40 to 50% Palestinian now. And King Hussein threw out a bunch of Palestinians, murdered a whole bunch of Palestinians that were supposed to be there. Anyhow, Begin did a marvelous job and convinced them that they did have a land, and we had a land, and Israel was entitled to their land. So every night we'd have a critique, and they were very impressed with Begin. So the last critique before we were coming back, and by the way, we visit Israel industrialists, we visit the president of Israel, the prime minister, the defense minister, the foreign minister,
we visited everybody. It was really a fantastic trip, which I put together through the Foreign Ministry of Israel. I didn't go through UJA because this wasn't a U. We all went to Yad Vashem. They were visibly moved by Yad Vashem when we said the Kaddish there, and we did it in English and in Hebrew for their benefit. And at the end of the, and both these trips went marvelous. They were a year apart, by the way.
Yes.
At the end, I critiqued them. I said, okay, guys, when I call Johnny Hines down in the Senate and say there's this vote coming up on foreign aid or this vote coming up vis-a-vis Israel, he expects me to do it as a Jew, and he responds to me. But I'm going to call you guys now, because you have a lot of influence in this country, not only to call John Hines, but senators that you know from other states, to support me and support Israel on these kind of bills. And to a man, they said, we think it
can help.
We can help. We'll be glad to do it. So it was maybe, I think, one of the most important things I did as a president of the Federation.
Was Hines one of them?
Brilliant news.
Well, Hines was, no, he didn't go because he was a senator at that time, John.
Oh, yes, right, excuse me.
But it was a great, they were great, two great trips. It was good public relations. Mm-hmm. I believe in public relations. That's one of the reasons when we built that West Point Chapel, I put in, not only do we put in a chapel, but we put in a museum showing Jewish contributions to the military, mm-hmm. whether they were West Pointers or not.
You had a participation in that? In the West Point Chapel?
Yeah, I was one of the prime movers.
Well, you could have said so before.
Well, I did. I was one of the prime movers. I had a meeting around the city. I raised money in Pittsburgh. I raised money all over the country.
Mm-hmm. Is there a Navy chapel, do you know?
I don't think, no, the Jewish chapel at the Naval Academy now. Mm-hmm.
I know there's one at the Air Force Academy in Colorado.
Yeah. But anyhow, that was good public relations too. I did that thing at West Point, not only for the chapel, but I thought it was a wonderful PR. So because, West Point gets several million visitors a year, mm-hmm. and we got that on the regular visiting tour. Mm-hmm. Jewish chapel's a spot.
Yeah.
And, people go there from middle America. Mm-hmm. They're shocked that there's a West Point chapel, A, and B, that Jews have contributed to the military role in America from its very inception.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
Yeah, we know that, but who else?
The non-Jews don't know it, and mm-hmm. particularly, kids come from all over the country. They're from North Dakota or wherever, mm-hmm. and they see that. So those are, I think, very important things for us as Jews, ways to combat anti-Semitism and give people a new perspective of who we are. All that anti-Semitism is ignorance. It's just like any kind of bigotry, it's ignorance.
I'm glad you said that, but I don't believe it.
So tell me,
there's an awful lot of people who know a lot.
So tell me what other things you did. I mean, that is more than one person. I could even think that one person could do, but I'm sure there's other things you did.
Well, I tell you one thing I did. I have great kids.
We have to talk about them too.
Great kids.
We've got very little tape left, so your grandkids.
Let me talk about my kids.
Right, right. Okay.
And my grandkids.
Okay. Yeah, please do.
I have 15 grandchildren. Nancy has 7. Kathy has 4. And Timmy has 4. Nancy's kids are the oldest because she's been married the longest. Her oldest child, Esty, just came home from...
You give me their ages.
Esty is 19.
Mm-hmm.
20, I think she's 20. 19.
Close enough.
E-S-T-E-D.
Let me tell you something. We don't. You have 15. It's hard to remember all their ages. I'm not going to give you their ages.
Right. Okay.
I can't remember mine.
And their birthdays. I mean, who can remember all those?
No, forget the birthdays. It's an idea.
Yeah. But Essie's the oldest of Nancy's kids. They range in age every 2 years from 19 down to 4. Essie just concluded a year of study in Australia at Lubavitch or the Orthodox is like an advanced yeshiva, graduate course in yeshiva studies. She, a wonderful kid. I think she was like first or second in her class at yeshiva. She did, those kids, get a good education, both secular and Judaic. So all those kids, all of Nancy's kids are at the yeshiva. And they're wonderful kids. Kathy's kids...
So give me the names of Nancy's children.
Nancy's children?
Okay.
Esty? I'm going in the age of the oldest now. These are girls. Esty, Dina, Shana, and Debbie. Those are the four girls. And she has three boys. Avi, Yaakov, and Mendy.
Because I'm sure that these children in the future are going to do many things for the Jewish for Jewish life and Jewish community service. Yaakov, who's the last one?
Mendy.
Maybe the last one.
No, Nancy's true. I'm pretty sure. I think she'd have more if I get into it, but I think she's true.
Okay.
Kathy, who is married name is Kathy Groz.
D-R-O-Z-E.
T-R-O-Z.
Oh, T-R-O-Z.
D-R-O-Z. Kathy still works for Fred Rogers' Neighborhood, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
What does she do for him?
Well, she started off as a volunteer. Then she became, she's a graduate of Northwestern in radio, TV, and film. And she became producer of the Fred Rogers' Neighborhood show. And when she started to have children, she had to give up production because they would go on a shoot, maybe could be gone all night, whatever. So she now is the business manager for Family Communications. And she works and she enjoys it. And Fred Rogers, whose son happens to live across the street from us here, always tells me, "Your Kathy is so wonderful, don't let her quit. Don't ever let her quit." And just as in his sweet, wonderful way.
And her
children are Lainey, who is an adopted child. Dan had been married before, and that was his daughter. But we consider her one of our grandchildren, obviously. She's the same age as Esty, and she's at Penn State in the drama school. And she has David, who is 10, and goes to East Hills. Kathy, that's one of the magnet schools. And Benjamin is at Winchester, and Ben is, David's 10, Ben is 8. And Rebecca, the baby who is 4, is at, or 5, is in kindergarten. They went to Shady Lane, now they're at, she's at East Hills also.
Isn't it strange that some of your grandchildren are at a public school and some are in private schools?
Well, I don't really think so. She wants to make sure they get the best possible education. She thinks East Hills is a very good school.
Mm.
Yeah, that school's probably 50% black and 50% white. Mm. Benjamin needed more discipline than they gave him at East Hills. So she put them into JDC, into the Jewish day school. And then she didn't think she had enough discipline here, and she took them to Shady Side, to Winchester.
Winchester.
So and he happens to be one of these kids that's inordinately bright and doesn't pay much attention to what's going on in school because he already knows what you're talking about.
Okay, go on.
The other, my son Tim, has 4 children. The oldest one is Shana, Shoshana is her real name, Shoshana, and she's in the first year at a public high school.
Which?
In Michigan.
Michigan.
How old is Shoshana?
She's 15, I guess. Yeah. West Bloomfield. West Bloomfield, Michigan.
Okay.
Her other three children are in Hillel Academy, which is a day school there, and it's the largest day school in Detroit. Colleen happens to be the vice principal, my daughter-in-law, Timmy's wife, of that day school. She has a PhD in education, and then she got her PhD at Harvard and in education, and she's in charge of the curriculum in the school. I assume it's the secular curriculum.
Okay, so we have Shoshana. All I have is Shoshana.
Okay, the other three kids are Jake, who's a about 14, it just was my mitzvah this past year.
Okay.
Katie, who is 10, and Josh, who is 8, and they're in the basement in Tumah.
Okay.
So that's
blessed.
My grandchildren. That's all of them.
You are blessed.
Is there anything you would like to have done differently, or more, something that you didn't get to?
Well, there's always things, you know, if you, when you reflect, you can always find a lot of things you would have done differently. I did allude to one thing, and I said, well, I think I would have done better in giving myself a much better Jewish education personally. That's the only thing that I really regret that I didn't do. Everything, the rest of my life, I think the things that I did were productive and important, and unfortunately got a fantastic relationship with our children. We were very close. I'm lucky I have a wonderful wife. She's a very special lady, and the kids adore her, from the grandchildren to the kids. And she's a very special woman. She's very special. She would come from a song, and I was lucky. I was very fortunate.
Did she work? Did we discuss?
No, my wife had a professional vacationist all her life. No,
she did a good job bringing up those children.
Yeah, but she had a great relationship. Listen, another thing I regret, when we were kids, and we had a help in that, this house, when we were young adults with a young family. And, you know, we didn't spend as much time with the children as maybe we should have in those days. We had a couple here. We had a cook and a maid. We were lucky. We had a woman who was a college graduate and got into some kind of personal difficulty and took a job as a housekeeper. And she was just a wonderful. Her father was an attorney here in town. And she took care of our kids, so we could travel. I traveled a lot more as a young person than I do as an older person. So the other thing that I do have certain regrets of is that we didn't spend more time with our kids when they were little. We spent time, but not. We had somebody else raising them. We don't do the things that my kids do with their kids today. But I think that's probably part of the time we live in. We lived in then, vis-a-vis the time we live in now. But. We do have. You asked me the question of anything I would have done. That I reflect on, that I would have done. The only thing, those are the only two things I could think of.
Yeah.
And yet those kids turned out so great, and we have such a close relationship with them. We try to spend all the holidays together. When we're in Florida, we come home for Thanksgiving. Timmy comes in with his family from Michigan. We all have Thanksgiving dinner together. Naomi makes the turkey, and Thanksgiving is the one holiday that the religious and as far as the local political atmosphere in Pittsburgh, I think we've been blessed because we've had some very special people. Dave Lawrence was a fantastic mayor. He not only had the support of the Democrats, but everybody in the community. And we were lucky, and I think Pittsburgh is a city that hasn't had any grass.
Barr, Flaherty?
I think they all did their job, and they all were okay. You know, they weren't all geniuses, and they weren't all high-level people, but I think that there was a good, harmonious feeling in the city. We, for the first time, Pittsburgh's going to have a Republican commissioner, majority commissioners. And I don't know what's going to happen with that. I think you're going to see a different atmosphere in the city, definitely. And not that I'm a Democrat, per se, but historically the Democrats and the Jewish community were very harmonious. They got along well. They did a lot of things for us. Tom Forrester and Pete Flaherty did a lot of things that the Jewish community asked them to do. So I think we've been fortunate. And I think Pittsburgh, by and large, is not one of those cities where there's a lot of graft, a lot of all these horrible things that happen in a lot of public life, particularly at this level, at the community level.
That's what I have to ask.
That's where it happens. We haven't had a lot here. I'm satisfied that.
Did you know our old lady Jewish mayor?
Of course, Sophie. Yeah, Sophie turned out to be a good mayor. A lot of people laughed at her. and she has all these malaprops. But she's a good lady. She's a good lady. She was a good mayor and a good lady. She tried to do what was right for the community.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've been fortunate in Pittsburgh in that respect.
Did you know Bishop Morrow by any chance?
Well, I know him through Jack Donahue. I don't know him real well.
Uh-huh.
He's a very special guy, by the way. You know, he went to Israel last year with Bernie Ra and Jack Donahue. Jack's a classmate of mine from West Point. And I know Jack very well. And they're adored. Talk about kids, they got
14.
Really. Well, they got about. I used to compare.
14.
Yeah, I
14.
Used to say that we were doing better per capita than he was with our grandchildren, but I gave that up.
They're nice children, too.
Yeah, they're lovely. They're lovely.
Husband,
he's a very special guy, Jack. But Bishop Worrell is, I think we're fortunate to have him in the city, too. He's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good guy.
His predecessor who became cardinal?
I didn't know him.
Didn't know him.
Look, we've all had our apprehensions about some of the popes, and we rightly so. Pius certainly didn't do anything to save those mm-hmm. Jews getting killed, and he knew about it like everybody knew about it. Like I thought this speaker that they had it recently.